This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It's great to have you with us for the Wednesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Jennifer Kuiper. We have 33 degrees in Chicago. We've already hit our high. We have some cloudy skies as well. Coming up on today's Noon Business Hour, Apple and McDonald's earnings beat expectations. Boeing posts its first annual loss since 1997. We'll find out what Chair Jerome Powell has to say as the Fed wraps up its two-day meeting. And the latest snapshot of the housing market is out.
Right now, the earnings reports just keep on coming in. Let's check out McDonald's and Apple. Michael Palumbo joining us, founder of MJP Capital, author of the book Calculated Risk. He's based here in Chicago. Mike, always good to have you on the show. Let's begin with McDonald's. What's going on there? Pretty good earnings report.
Yeah, good afternoon, Cisco and Jennifer, and thanks for having me on. I just want to wish a happy birthday to my dad. He turns 94 today, and he's listening. So, Dad, I'll see you soon.
Happy birthday, Dad.
So, McDonald's, they basically just posted $1.97 a share, which was basically in line with the $1.96 analysts expected, and sales were $5.3 billion versus $5.3 expected. So you got a company that's hitting their numbers. They're not growing much. The same store sales were up 5.9% globally, which is decent. But you got a company that is in a sector that is having a difficult time growing, which is fast food. Fast food, other than breakfast, right now is actually in decline. So you have customers that are looking for other options, healthier options, and it does show in the stock price. McDonald's has been basically in a trading range for the last year, and I expect that to continue throughout 2020.
You talk about the popularity of breakfast. Is that the growth area for McDonald's? Yesterday we talked about their new breakfast chicken sandwiches that they're rolling out.
Exactly. So they are definitely focusing on breakfast, but so are some of their competitors. So that because that's the area that is growing, McDonald's is trying to innovate there, and I think it's been successful so far. But again, you've got other fast food competitors doing the same thing. So there's only so much you can squeeze out of breakfast, but that certainly is the area McDonald's is focusing on.
So what else does McDonald's need to do to increase that foot traffic? Because you can only raise prices so much.
Right, and that's what's happened. So it's interesting. The foot traffic is actually down, and the only reason why they raise sales is because of price increases. Now, can they continue to do that? Their goal, they've stated, is that they need to increase U.S. foot traffic. How are they going to do it? I'll be honest with you, I don't know how they're going to do it. You know, you asked me the question, I wish I had a great answer. The trends are saying that they won't be able to. And so that's why I think the stock is going to be just treading water for a while, because they're going to only be able to increase sales by raising prices. At least that's our feeling here at MJP Capital, and I would just say I would avoid the stock, as it should be in a trading range for the foreseeable future.
Good news for Apple. The Apple rises as earnings and iPhone sales smashed expectations. With the Apple iPhones, are the products boosting sales, or is it that people are holding on to their phones longer and we're seeing some pent-up demand?
It's actually the product offerings have been fantastic, and the iPhone now, it takes up over 60% of Apple's revenue. So if you're buying Apple right here, you're betting on the continued success of the iPhone itself. They really haven't done a great job in their other areas. In fact, the Mac is actually, and iPad sales are down. So really, this is an iPhone story. I think it will be an iPhone story. It's amazing what they did with their numbers. It reminds me of the old Steve Jobs days, where they would come and post 10% earnings beats on better than expected revenue, and that's what they did this quarter. $4.99 versus $4.54, that's pretty remarkable for a company that's the second largest company in the world in market cap, next to Aramco, which is obviously the oil company out in Saudi Arabia that just listed. So up until they were listed, Apple was the largest company in the world. The stock has doubled in 1 year. Now, for a company that's $700 billion in market cap to go to $1.4 billion in 1 year, it's an unbelievable run. I think that Here, though, it's fully valued. If there's going to be an increase in the stock price going forward, I think it'll be muted. But what an unbelievable run. If you had the stock the last year, you are very happy.
And both of these stocks now up today. McDonald's up 1.5% and Apple up 2.5%.
Great stuff. Thanks, Mike Palumbo, founder of MJP Capital and author of the book Calculated Risk. Coming up, a look at the latest measure of the U.S. housing market. Pending home sales fell nearly 5% in December. Let's look behind the numbers with Gus Fauché, chief economist, PNC Financial Services. Gus, is this a seasonal weather-related fall in signed contracts?
I don't think so, because we actually had a very good month for home building in December, and I think the weather was generally positive. We had a very strong 2019. I think perhaps some of that was just making up for earlier strong sales. And then also, there's just a shortage of inventory on the market, and that may be weighing on sales as well.
What about positive signs? Did you see some of those coming out of this report?
To be honest with you, there wasn't a whole lot that was positive in it. We saw sales decline in all four regions of the country in December. That being said, I do think that the drivers for the housing market are going to be positive in 2020. We have, good job growth, good wage growth, very low mortgage rates. Inventories are tight. There's no question about that. But we have a lot of supply coming on. And so I would expect that generally housing and home building will be positives for economic growth in 2020.
We've seen the fact that housing prices are rising. Obviously, it just depends on which region you're in, but in general, they're rising. Does that have an impact at all on sales?
Obviously, although low mortgage rates are offsetting some of that, affordability is becoming more of an issue. Housing is still much more affordable than it was heading into the Great Recession, and I don't get any impression that households are stretched trying to purchase a home. But affordability has declined, and that is something of a drag on home sales at the end of 2019.
Yeah, there's mortgage rates. It's a little interesting as they've been just historically low for so long. I'm wondering if when people go to apply for them, any little uptick at all in the mortgage rate feels bigger just because they've been so low.
That's right. And obviously, in percentage terms, a small increase does have a larger percentage impact when interest rates are low. That being said, they are still down by about a percentage point over the past year or so. And I think that mortgage rates in general are positive for the housing market in early 2020.
Gus, the Fed is not expected to change the rate, but what will you be listening for from Fed Chair Jerome Powell when he speaks?
It's going to be, where does he think the Fed is going to be going over the course of 2020? I do not expect to see the Fed raise interest rates or cut interest rates, for that matter, this year. Monetary policy is mildly stimulative for growth in early 2020. I think that we will see a bit of softness in the economy. One thing to look for is what Powell says about Boeing and its impact on economic growth. Do they think Boeing is going to be a big factor, and do they think it's going to be something that just lasts for a quarter or so, or do they think it's going to have longer lasting impacts on the U.S. economy?
You said softness in the economy. Where do you see that softness?
Trade is a concern. Business investment is looking a little bit softer. Obviously, the industrial sector, and now you have the problems at Boeing on top of that. That being said, consumer spending accounts for about 70% of the U.S. economy. Consumers are in great shape. Home building is a positive. So I expect to see continued expansion throughout this year.
Gus Fauché, thanks for the insight. Gus is chief economist at PNC Financial Services, based in Pittsburgh.
Up next, the impact of coronavirus on the energy market.
The best daily deal in Chicago, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Travel restrictions fueled by the coronavirus are weighing on the oil market. Phil Flynn is joining us. Phil is senior market analyst at Price Group, also a Fox Business News contributor. He's based here in Chicago. Phil, it doesn't seem like that long ago we were talking to you about oil being above $60 a barrel, and man, has that turned around.
It sure has, and I'll tell you, the main reason oil prices were above $60 a barrel was demand expectations out of China. We had a U.S.-China trade deal that went through, and we really thought that was going to give a big boost to economic growth, and China was importing a record amount of oil, and then all of a sudden, this black swan coronavirus comes out of nowhere, and that outlook changes overnight.
So talk about why that is the change, what it might do to China, what it might do to the oil markets.
Well, already we're seeing significant demand destruction. What that is, Cisco, is oil supplies, demand that would have been there but has disappeared because of this virus. because of all the planes that are getting grounded, the trains that are not moving, the cities that are getting shut down. You know, traditionally, that would add up to hundreds of thousands of barrels of oil demand per day. And it looks like it's getting worse from the demand side, at least in the short term, because it doesn't look like that the cities are getting ready to reopen. On top of that, you know, the Chinese factories were shut down for the Lunar New Year. And because of this virus, they're not going to restart. So, you know, that expectation that the demand was going to be there is gone. The biggest question for the oil market is how quickly that demand comes back. And at this point, nobody really knows.
Phil, what do we think we could see at the pump? Yesterday, I noticed some slightly lower prices, but is that just too soon?
No, I think you're going to see lower prices at the pump, Jennifer. Time to celebrate, enjoy these prices. This, you know, the flip side of this bad story is it is going to have a real negative impact on prices at the pump. We could see prices fall another 10 to 15 cents a gallon because of this, partly because, you know, the gallons that would be normally burned in China are not getting burned, and that's going to put more supply on the global market. Having said that, you know, we're getting reports right now that OPEC is not going to stand idly by and just let prices collapse. You know, they're already talking about responding with an additional production cut if things continue to get worse. So enjoy that low price for a while, because if OPEC steps in, it may actually stabilize those prices and start having them tick up again.
Thanks so much, Phil Flynn, Senior Market Analyst, Price Group, and Fox Business News contributor.
Coming up, we are going to discuss the coronavirus as it is certainly taking hold in areas all around the globe. And also, you can find a podcast on the coronavirus. It's the WBBM In-Depth Podcast, that available right now on the radio.com app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Jennifer Kuiper. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
Cyber thieves are taking an increasing interest in your retirement accounts. We'll get some help in personal finance Wednesday.
The coronavirus outbreak is creating problems for global car makers.
The spread of the disease could prompt travel restrictions between the U.S. and China.
Governor Pritzker makes a push for his graduated income tax proposal during his State of the State address.
On Wall Street, the Dow up 158 points. The NASDAQ is up 42. The S&P up 13. And oil today is down right about 0.5%.
And AccuWeather says we're going to see some flurries today. A high of 33. Tonight, mainly cloudy. Low 27. We have 33 degrees at O'Hare and 32 at Midway and the Lakefront.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by Republic Bank of Chicago.
Markets are gaining ground today. Let's take a look at a couple of key Dow components with Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services and publisher of the Dow Theory Forecast Newsletter. Chuck, what is affecting the markets today? Right now, we see the Dow, NASDAQ, and S&P up.
Well, you see a bit of follow-through from yesterday's rebound, as well as some earnings that are being received fairly favorably in some Dow components, specifically Boeing, even though Boeing's reported numbers were fairly horrible, which it was expected to be given the problems it's had with its MAX. The investors are starting to kind of look past that and trying to determine if, in fact, we're getting pretty close to a worst-case bottom here in terms of the concessions and costs that Boeing says that the MAX grounding will cost it. Those concessions and costs are actually coming in slightly below what analysts had estimated. So that's kind of the silver lining and why you see the stock up today. I think another factor that is helping the stock, and it's not getting much play, but, you know, there were some concerns about Boeing's financial position here, whether they would be able to maintain the dividend, et cetera. And the company got a kind of a shot in the arm, as it looks like they're going to be making a debt offering here in early February. And right now they've got at least $14 billion in loan commitments. So there are plenty of people out there willing to loan Boeing a lot of money. And I think that's emboldening investors that perhaps the financial position's still in pretty good shape if they have that many commitments lined up.
And are they buying what he's saying, what Dave Calhoun is saying? I mean, he's saying that they can meet the FAA certification timeline. They're not changing the name of the aircraft. And he's still talking about transparency. Are they buying that?
Today they are. I think the fact that, you know, the company still said that they're looking at mid-2020 for bringing it back online. They haven't changed that based on today's news. I think that was something that the market was pleased to hear as well. You know, we'll get a sense of that obviously as we get closer to that mid-year deadline. But you know, at least today the stock is responding, and investors are willing to give the company the benefit of the doubt on that.
Yeah, Boeing up right about 2.5% today. Let's pivot here to General Electric. It looks like its comeback is moving forward.
It is. You know, we're about 1 year now anniversary of Larry Culp taking over command of the company, and he's very well thought of as a turnaround artist, and looks like the turnaround is taking shape. A big concern for investors in GE was the company's ability to generate cash flow, and they had good news on that front. It looks like their industrial business is going to generate free cash flow anywhere from $2 to $4 billion this year, which is well above what a lot of people on Wall Street was expecting. The company had some revenue growth in a number of its operations and forecasts that it'll have organic revenue growth in the low single digits in 2020. So, you know, you start checking off a lot of boxes when you're looking at a turnaround in GE. One, free cash flow improving. Two, revenue growth, which is something that hadn't been seen. Three, you have, you know, a time-tested person, turnaround artist running the company. So you add those things up, and you get a, you know, 10% move in the stock today as people are pretty comfortable that, you know, the worst is behind the company.
And really interesting to see GE's rise up about 40% over the past year. And there was a time when people were wondering if it was ever going to turn around. Tell us, I mean, what have they really done? What's the turnaround been?
Well, you know, first off, to have a turnaround, you have to have a company that has to stick around long enough to have a turnaround. So which means the financial position is all important. And that was the biggest scare that investors had with GE was really, you know, the debt loads and the problems with its GE Capital business. So, you know, the first thing that people wanted to see in terms of a turnaround was, you know, is this company going to be around long enough to really turn around, i.e. is their financial position improving? And that clearly has been the case over the last 12 months and especially in this quarter. So now things shift from can the company survive to how can the company start to generate growth? And this quarter we saw a little bit of that in some of its operations. So, you know, that's kind of how these long turnarounds develop. It's, you know, first it's financial and then second it's operational. And I think the company's making headway on both of those fronts.
We've talked quite a bit about aviation, especially with some of the things going on, the 737 MAX, and we've in recent days, the coronavirus. How is GE's aviation business doing?
You know, I actually didn't have a bad quarter. They had some revenue growth there. Now, they are impacted by the MAX. They make the engines for that. But that business, I think, was surprisingly decent for the company. And you couple that with the power business, which had been a real problem, was better in the quarter, and you looked at some, and the industrial business was pretty strong as well. So, you know, they had a nice quarter, and obviously the stock is reflecting that today.
So what's the Dow theory telling us these days?
Dow theory is bullish. We had been waiting on the transports to go to what we felt was an important high. They did that in mid-January. It's not unusual following confirmations of a bull market trend under the Dow theory that you get the market to pull back because it takes a fair amount of energy to make those confirmations. So, you know, again, investors, just because we have a Dow theory that's the primary trend is bullish doesn't preclude markets pulling back, you know, 5 to 8%, which are typical secondary corrections within bull markets. But the good news is with a primary trend bullish under the Dow theory, investors should have confidence buying those dips, knowing that the dips are occurring within a primary bull market.
Chuck Carlson, thanks so much for all the info. Chuck is CEO of Horizon Investment Services, also publisher of the Dow Theory Forecast Newsletter.
Up next in Personal Finance Wednesday, an expert shares ways to help keep your retirement account secure.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Personal Finance Wednesday on the Noon Business Hour. This afternoon, we're focusing on keeping your hard-earned retirement money safe from cyber crooks. We're joined by Joe Alexak, partner and cybersecurity expert at Plant Moran here in Chicago. Joe, good to have you back on the show here. This is sort of a new arena, isn't it? Or at least one that we haven't heard a lot about. Ordinarily, it's credit cards, checking accounts, but now they're trying to take your retirement.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's an area that I think has been overlooked in the past, but there's quite a bit of dollars there for attackers to go after. And, you know, folks tend to to spend a little less time focused on monitoring and watching their accounts and transactions in this space as opposed to, you know, credit card transactions or bank transactions.
Yeah, does that make it easier for them? It seems like they would be able to get in and mess around, and a lot of people set it and forget it with retirement, so it may be 6 months before you see anything.
Yeah, like, you know, anything, it's about layers. You know, there's a reason burglars and thieves pass over the house with lights on and the dogs barking, right? They're going to go where there's least resistance. And when you're not monitoring or staying on top of the transactions that may be occurring, when you're not paying attention, they're definitely going to take advantage of that.
So, Joe, what are some recommendations to keep things secure and locked down?
Yeah, no, definitely. Well, there's really two things, two main suggestions. One is, you know, understand what tools are available to you, and then understand what you're responsible for. So when I say what tools are available to you, you need to think about your financial advisor, your custodial protections that are available, right? Are they offering you any kind of assurances that your money will be safe no matter what happens? And if so, what are the caveats that go along with that? So it's important for you to understand what those are, and then to make sure that you're doing what you need to do to protect yourself.
And I'm curious, should you consider keeping retirement assets separate and not consolidating them, even though it might be the good financial move?
That's a great question. You know, I think it really comes to your risk tolerance. Obviously, you want to get the biggest bang for your dollar. Putting them into a single fund might be the right choice financially. From a security perspective, you may feel uncomfortable doing so. I would suggest doing what's right for you and what you think is important. But make sure you're doing some of the basic things related to cybersecurity to protect yourself. I mean, really, that's what it all comes down to.
So if people listen to us and they start checking their accounts more often, because, you know, I'm a little scared, I mean, is someone coming after my money? The more they start looking at it, the more they might be tempted to make changes. Would you advise them to avoid that?
You don't want to make rash decisions. Again, I think you focus on the basics, you know, strong passwords. Don't reuse your passwords. Don't use passwords that you might use for social media, LinkedIn, Yahoo Mail, Google Mail, et cetera. Don't use those for the same accounts that are protecting high dollar value assets, you know, personal assets.
I have a lot of apps on my phone. I'll be honest, I have a lot of apps on my phone I have not updated in a long, long, long time. Would you say that we should do that when it comes to these financial apps?
You know, absolutely. Not just the financial apps, but the hardware in which you're using to access, right, those applications. So, for example, on your cell phone, make sure you're staying on top of the most recent versions, whether it's iOS or Android. Your router at home, your personal router at home, make sure you're not using a default password. Make sure you're keeping up with the latest and greatest firmware. You know, it's a lot of technical mumbo jumbo, but if you learn what you're responsible for and you execute on that from the basics, I think you'll be nice and secure.
And are there certain questions you should ask your financial advisor or the banks to make sure that they are helping to keep your money safe as well?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if you're concerned, I would definitely visit each of the sites. They have security pages where they talk about what they're doing for you. And you'll also see the fine print, and where you do have questions. And I would definitely read the fine print, but where you do have questions, reach out to your advisor or reach out to the support that they offer to find out more about what you're responsible for.
Good advice. Thanks so much. Always appreciate you being on the show. Joe Aleksak, he is a partner and cybersecurity expert at Plante Moran here in Chicago.
Join us at this time tomorrow for Technology Thursday, and still to come, how the auto industry is being impacted by the coronavirus.
And remember, a podcast of the Noon Business Hour always available on the radio.com app.
Download the WBBM Noon Business Hour podcast, or if you missed only a portion, rewind on the radio.com app.
Fallout from the coronavirus is being felt in the automotive industry. Let's get the latest from Jeff Gilbert, CBS auto reporter based in Detroit, Michigan. And Jeff, how is the coronavirus affecting the auto industry overseas?
Well, it's affecting the auto industry big time because China is the largest car market in the world. So just about every car maker is operating there. Just about every major supplier is operating there. And there are a lot of operations around Wuhan, the area where the coronavirus is. So most of these car companies are severely restricting, if not prohibiting, travel. Ford has even said for employees who come back from China, you need to self-quarantine, essentially work from home for 2 weeks to make sure you don't have the virus.
So are the big three ready to make any kind of moves or have any plans in place if we get the coronavirus here in larger numbers?
Well, at this point, it's mostly about what's happening in China. So they're taking a look at their operations there. Most of those operations are actually suspended this week because it's a Lunar New Year in China. So they're trying to determine whether they want to resume those operations next week as planned or continue to have them slowed down. But for now, it's mostly isolating people, keeping them from moving, and keeping them from bringing the virus over here.
So are we talking an impact on any manufacturing, sales? Is it sort of general?
It's early to tell that. I mean, there definitely could be an impact on manufacturing if they have to keep their plants closed longer. There could be an impact on sales, particularly in China, if people are not going to dealerships to buy vehicles. Chinese sales have fallen already. Although one analyst that I talked to yesterday said during the SARS virus, vehicle sales in China actually went up because Chinese residents were concerned about getting onto crowded public transportation. So they were buying cars. Of course, that was nearly 20 years ago. So it's really hard to tell what the impact would be right now.
This is what the auto industry does not want. I mean, already analysts think that this could be a slower sales year. How serious is this concern?
Yeah, it's a big concern because Chinese sales have been slowing. They expect sales to slow even more. And the car companies initially saw China as a big place where they could make a lot of money. GM got in early. They made a lot of money. China essentially kept them afloat before their bankruptcy. Well, the last couple of years have been difficult. GM is about the only domestic car company that's still making money in China. So it's going to hurt Ford and Fiat Chrysler's efforts to turn their Chinese operations around. And it's obviously going to impact GM's profits there as well. Still too early to tell how much.
What product are the Chinese buying? What do they like from GM?
Well, the Chinese, you know, it's like the U.S. They like crossovers. They like SUVs. Early on, they were big into big Buicks. But now that the Chinese market has matured, it's very much into SUVs. There are some small cars sold there, more than the U.S., and it's mostly small utilities. I mean, we're not talking about Expeditions and Navigators and vehicles like that. We're talking about smaller crossovers.
That's Jeff Gilbert, CBS Auto Reporter out of Detroit. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks very much. If you missed any part of today's Noon Business Hour, we'll have the replay podcast available shortly at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Radio.com app. And the coronavirus is the topic of this week's WBBM In-Depth Podcast. You can find that as well on the Radio.com app.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.